to the forefront for everybody to be on the same page with. So you may be asking who Dan is. Dan is actually one of my heroes on the top of my list. He's a Vietnam veteran. He was, which I believe is like one of the most difficult wars anyone could have been in, because during that time they didn't receive any support from their fellow Americans, and a lot of them volunteered, which took a lot of guts. During that time, a lot of the dogs in Vietnam were killed or didn't go home. So we're kind of looking at something in present day today where the dogs got stuck in Afghanistan and did not come home. And Dan is working very hard to get those dogs back on U.S. soil. So we're just going to go over a few questions with Dan. And this is kind of a question and answer. If you have questions, put them in the comments. But this is kind of on the current events of what's going on over there, a little bit of an introductory to military working dogs, contract working dogs, and what we'll be doing on a weekly basis. So Dan, go ahead and give your own little introduction as well, please.
Okay, first, if anybody does live in the Tampa Bay area, if they go to the Veterans Park at 301 off by 4, there is a statue of the German Shepherd. And right underneath it, to the right side, is a plaque of me and my dog from Vietnam. I had that because honoring my dog, he had done great work, and he actually saved my life one day, and we'll probably get to that during this interview. I went into the military in 1970. After going to college at what is now Seminole State, and I was going through criminology, and I told my professor that I think my draft number's coming up, so I'll go ahead and join because I want to get what I wanted to get. I contracted to be military police and nothing else. But as I got through the military police school, we were all filed into a large auditorium, and the speaker told us half of you will be going into confinement and the other half will be going into dog handling. Well, I didn't want to sit in some tower looking at prisoners all day, so I was the first one in line for dog handling. From there, I went from Benning Gordon and to Okinawa to Sentry Dog School, and then from there, I was shipped out to a very tropical climate. After 1973, I got out after 3 years. And went to work for a company in Orlando that trained Orlando police dogs, Orange County Sheriff dogs, and we went on to train Disney World, SeaWorld, and Wet n Wild. I found the training for police work so fascinating that I applied, submitted a training course to Florida Department of Law Enforcement Criminal Justice Standard Training Division, to become a certified police canine unit instructor for the state of Florida. Fortunately enough, I had to be under the auspices of a college that had a police academy. So I went back to the state, Seminole State College, and lo and behold, the professor that I had prior to going was then the dean, and he wrote me right off and he said, you're on staff. So from there, I spent 30 years training police canine units in explosives and narcotics. I also owned a training facility that was 3,200 square feet, in which I did in-kennel boarding, grooming, and in-kennel training, as well as guard dog rental. So I also was a member of several animal control boards that dealt with laws in different jurisdictions, as well as provided animal control services to a couple cities. So with that, I will go on and answer any questions you have.
Okay, so for those that are just popping in, I see Kendra's asking, what's this? So we're doing an interview with Dan O'Connell, I may mess your name again, Dan, on military working dogs and contract working dogs in the situation in Afghanistan. He just gave a little background on himself and his experience and where he's coming from. So we're going to move on to a couple of the questions that we have for him. If you have questions, put them in the comments. Can you guys see me okay? I know we can't have Dan on camera. I know some people on those, they blame them on camera. We can't have Dan, but if you guys can see me, sorry, I can't blame Dan on camera. Okay, so going on to the next one, let's just kind of lay a little bit of a foundation on the history of what we're dealing with in current day events. So Dan, if you could just go over a little bit and just give us a brief overview of what exactly happened in Vietnam with all canines.
Well, it's misfortunate because the fact that dogs in Vietnam and up to around 2015, they were considered equipment. So as you see, with the equipment being left in Afghanistan, so was the equipment left in Vietnam, but they left the dogs. And for not allowing the people to take the dogs and eat them, 4,600 dogs were killed, all military working dogs. From that time on, there was a push, and a push to Congress and everything else. And it took a long time, but fortunately in 2015, a federal law was passed that all military dogs will come back from overseas. So that's why you have the military dogs out of Afghanistan and back home.
And what were you telling me the other day about the law that took until 2015 for them to pass?
Yeah, it was the Canine Act that allowed the Department of Defense to change the regulations that took them out of equipment status and put them into another status in order for them to be transported back from overseas. And they did a lot of them were in cargo holds, but they were also allowed to ride in passenger sections of planes. So you may have been on an airplane and have seen military dogs flying around. That's because the law allows them to do that.
And you said it took until 2015 just for them to pass that?
It took until 2015. Actually, Senator Schumer was the one that introduced the bill, and President Obama was the one that signed it.
So, I mean, once again, these until 2015 from Vietnam. So. And here we are in 2021, and we're seeing what's going on over there. So we really, really want to help all canine heroes. Dan is the point of contact for that. He absolutely knows everything going on over there. He's trying his best to help them. So we're going to move on to another question, which is pretty much, I'm going to let you cover this part. Can you tell us about exactly what happened over there in Afghanistan with all canines recently?
What happened in Afghanistan, I have to tell you who I am. I am the director of militarydoghandlers.org, and we take care of dog handlers coming back from overseas that are seeking employment, may have to have financial assistance, and just giving them general support. I took that company and looked at what happened on the 31st of August. That's when the last plane was leaving Afghanistan. The general knew that there were two companies that left dogs, and actually left dogs in the crates, and they were assuming that the general was going to load them onto the plane. He couldn't. By CDC rules, no dogs were allowed to leave Afghanistan. So what happened is he ordered his crew to go ahead and release all the dogs in the airport. That would have been, one company had 66 dogs and three of them died in the last 3 days. And the other company had five dogs. So that left 68 dogs being allowed to run free in the airport. Now these were all contract working dogs. They're all either explosive detector dogs or protection explosive detector dogs, and then I'll get that in a minute where a PEDD is. He turned them loose and he left plenty of food and plenty of water and hoped that the Taliban would go on to take care of it, and left. And that's where I got involved. An Afghan handler had notified me. He is now in Canada. He left before all this happened, and he became my interpreter. So I started with a plan, and what I'm best at doing is bringing people together. And I developed a plan that I have a large organization here in the United States, and a person in Washington, D.C. that has influences in the State Department, but he also has influences with this large corporation. From there, I built a team in the United States. With the interpreter, I built a team in Afghanistan. They were telling me what condition the dogs were at the airport, and I also sent them out to look for other dogs that could be possibly in the Taliban area, in which we did find that there were not only two companies that left dogs there, but there were six companies that left dogs there. And to this day, we know that there is possibly between 200 and 300 contract working dogs left there. Now, explaining what a contract working dog is versus a military working dog, there is no difference, absolutely no difference. The only difference comes from who owns them. The military working dogs are owned by the military. The contract working dogs are owned by contractors that are hired either by the State Department to take care of different embassies, universities, different places that the military can and allows them to do, allows them to do more sensitive jobs. So that's the difference. The training is the same. The handlers are all trained the same. The dogs detect the same things. EDD dogs are explosive detector dogs. They alert on explosives. And PEDD dogs are protection explosive detector dogs, which means protection means patrol work. There's very similar to the dogs that your police departments have in their patrol cars for self-defense, capturing criminals, going on foot pursuit, turning the dog loose. So that's what that protection part is. Does that help you?
No, I think that pretty much sums up for people the difference, but really there's no difference. They're doing the same job, they're just labeled differently. One comes from contracting company, one comes from actually the military. So really quick shout out to Steve Estrada, who just checked on here. Steve Estrada is also a Vietnam hero as well. Thanks for being on here and watching with us and joining us here. If anyone has any questions up to this point, please let us know. Just drop it in the comments. So one of the other things that we want to talk about is why these canine heroes are so important. And it really ties in with our military personnel. So when we have soldiers overseas and we leave a canine there, or we disregard it and we put that dog to sleep or in, you know, for no reason, such as Dan's dog who got killed. Let me just stop right here. What we're gonna talk about might be triggering to some if you've been deployed, or if you had a canine that didn't get to go home with you, or if you absolved some dogs get left behind during your service. Next part might be a little bit triggering. So I'm just gonna throw that out there if anyone wants to check off or just be aware. So why is it so important that we take care of our canine heroes? So if we're not gonna take care of our canine heroes and we let our military personnel, our soldiers see that, then it's just a sign to them, are we gonna take care of them? You know, it's a trigger. It's all about morale and it's about taking care of our soldiers and showing them that we care. So, and we definitely care about our canines and our soldiers both equally. And So we want to talk about how that affects the individual soldier's mental health and their morale. So we're going to go into that, and especially mental health for soldiers is so important. There's organizations out there like Border Crest that you can go to, that you can seek help. And of course, we put the soldier's life above that of the canine. But we want to talk about how it ties in and why it's so important to us, not only as dog lovers, not only as trainers, why we care about the canines so much, but we also care about the canines because it affects the soldiers' lives, how those canines are treated. It really does. It has an impact. And Dan, I would like for you to kind of expound on that a little bit with your own experience.
Yeah, I would like to go back to my own dog and talk a little bit about him. He was a male, and his name was Roma. He was about 6 years old when I had him. Actually, it took me 2 weeks to get in on him because he was so mean he hated himself. But Christmas Eve 1972, they blew up the compound, and he physically dragged me out of that compound. He saved my life only to have a bullet put in his head. Yes, I do have PTSD. I mean, I struggle with it every day. I could have stayed there. What could I have done? There was just, so much going on. They're trying to get out, and it's hard on me to this day. Okay. Going to this day, a year ago, I acquired a contract working dog, a female, that is a German Shepherd. And she is so beautiful, and she is so intelligent and so bright and everything else. And she was, excuse me, she guarded the U.S. Embassy. Is that interfering with me talking to you all?
We can still hear you. It's okay. It just, your dog is talking for you as well. You're talking about your dog you just got, and she wanted to put her input in there.
Okay. He's a protection dog.
It's Polly, right?
No, that is not Polly. That's another dog.
Oh, okay. Because you said he, and I'm like, I thought your dog was a she.
Polly doesn't bark. If you broke into the house, she would lick you to death and help you carry everything out. She is such a sweetheart, and she loves everybody. When I go back to Florida, my best friend has a cat, and they both play and everything else. I mean, she even got a TikTok page at Florida Tazar. That's FLTAZAR. And you can see all the videos of her. She is just such a sweetheart. So then it comes to this, when I seen what was going on August 31st, and I had to do something. So that's when I got the teams together, got my interpreter together. And let me tell you what, that interpreter has been my pillar. He has been there all the way. And if you want me to go on to explain what happened from August 31st until present, I'd be more than glad to do that.
Yes, but really quick before you go into that. So just touching again on mental health of soldiers and these canines is, if you guys are considering, we're going to do a separate video on this, like adopting a military working dog. I've had veterans tell me that when they're having a PTSD moment or what have you, having a dog that they adopted that was in the same place they were at, that went through the same place, went through the same things that they did, really brought them comfort in their moments of struggling. So I just want to put that out there. So just under the topic of what we were just discussing, like the effects and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So
definitely.
I'm sure she probably brings you some comfort.
We have 23 veterans killing themselves every day. And a percent of those are dog handlers that have handled dogs. And, for one reason or another, they may have had a dog blown up during service. Different things that can trigger a PTSD moment. So having a service dog, which is other than a contract or a military dog, helps them tremendously.
Yeah, what I'm saying, like, I know personally people have told me, like, just when they adopted their contract working dog or military working dog, just having that battle buddy in their house, knowing that they've been through the same things they've been through, when they had their breakdowns, their meltdowns, it helped them. It really helped them to know that, like, their dog understood what they've been. And what they've been through. So yes, please go ahead and expound on the other what you're about to go into. We'll go ahead and move on to that.
Okay. You gotta understand that there was a lot of news media there in the end of August, okay? And they had the explosion. They had thousands and thousands of people at the gates. These dogs have experienced more than any dog could possibly experience. I mean, the tremendous, and I'm almost certain that all these dogs have PTSD. I mean, they've experienced things that should be experienced. There are dogs sitting in a kennel. I do know of one place that has 60 dogs. These are 60 more dogs upon what was at the airport that are starving, okay? So almost the second week of December, I was able to get a hold of the high-ranking official at the canine section of the airport, and he asked through my interpreter if I could provide him dog food. Okay, that gave me an outlet to make a plan to get these dogs out of here. So what I did is I reached out to some handlers that were there, and they left with their dogs with the responsible companies, and I had one tell me about a section of the airport that had kennels, but also had a semi full of dog food. So I directed my interpreter to tell this guy that there is a large amount of dog food there. Okay. When word got out, the Afghan handlers started bringing dogs to the airport. So the population of dogs started increasing, but the food started dwindling. Okay. So I made a comment to him, I would agree, and this became the negotiation into the plan that we were going to get these dogs out. I made a comment to him with the team I had in the United States that I would supply a plane load of dog food in exchange for dogs. This happened around mid-September, okay? And he agreed, but he added that he wanted to have two veterinarians to look at dogs while they were loading the plane with 50 contract working dogs. And I said, I will not only do that, but I also will send you supplies, all right? Now, keep in mind, I have not asked for a dime. I have not raised a cent. This is me coordinating things with people here in the United States and people in Afghanistan, okay? He agreed to allow 50 dogs to come back. We got the permits to land the plane and take the plane and take off. All right. We had a waiver from CDC to bring these dogs back to Virginia to 121 run kennel for evaluation. And then they would have been shipped to Florida for rehabilitation. And then from there, they would have been rehomed to any handlers that might have handled them in Afghanistan or to private homes that had experience in handling these type of dogs. Okay. We had the plane ready. I mean, everything was ready to go and we're ready to go. All right. The last minute they pulled the permits because the organization that is running the country right now put him into a higher position. So we lost that permit. All right. I didn't give up. I mean, I was distraught. I was heartbroken. I mean, I was crying. It was that bad because these dogs are highly trained, intelligent dogs, and they're going to waste. We got to get them out of there. They can't stay there. So I kept with my team, and I told the people in the United States, they got discouraged and everything else, and they came back and they said, okay, let us know if anything happens. So I have been working from mid-September until now with the team in Afghanistan. What can we do to assure us that we can get these dogs on a plane? Now, some things I can't tell you because they're sensitive, okay? And people I can't tell you who we're dealing with is sensitive. I will tell you that we are dealing with the leaders right now. One of my team members is very influential. I can't name his name. I can't tell you where he's from or what his position is. But they took my proposal to the leaders, and the leaders likes it, okay? And they are above the Ministry of Interior and the Ministry of Defense. Ministry of Interior owns all the contract working dogs that are in Kabul, all right? They are not owned by anybody else. When the dogs were released at the airport, they became abandoned. So anyway, and I missed the section here talking about the dogs that were released at the airport. What happened to them? Okay. The airport personnel told the Taliban that these dogs were valuable, that they would help protect them at the airport and everything else. So those people told them to round up the dogs, and they did. They rounded up the dogs, and they started the security section. And that's the security section that dealt with it, getting the dog food to them and dealing with them. And then we had a failed attempt at getting the dogs out. Now, getting today with the leaders, they liked my proposal, and they wanted an introductory letter. Yesterday, I made out the introductory letter, sent it to my interpreter. He read over it, made some changes to it and everything else, and he signed it. Okay, I had death threats. I have been known by rumors that I'm a spy, and that's furthest from the truth. I mean, All I care about are these dogs, and I have people lying about me and telling things about me and everything else that are not true. So anyway, he has sent the letter to my team in Afghanistan, and this very minute, they are taking it to the leaders. That's where we are right now, and we are asking for 70 dogs this time, and it could come down any minute, any day, and I'm so hoping that it happens, okay? We will have the permits to land and take off at the airport. We already have the waiver from CDC to bring these dogs back to Virginia to the kennels. With that, I'll be more than glad to answer any questions.
All right, does anyone have any questions at this point? So we're going to touch a little bit on, well, we'll wait for that question. I'm actually going to bounce down to the next one. And I'm going to skip a question on you, Dan. I don't want to confuse you. We're going to jump down to question 7. Can you give us a brief overview of once these canines get back on U.S. soil, how they will be taken care of and where they will go as far as the adoption process goes? Because I'm sure people are wondering, like, do you need rescues to open their doors? Do you need people to start filling out adoption applications?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know how many people have written me, emailed me, texted me, and got on my groups on Facebook and the pages on Facebook and Twitter and offered to take these dogs in. I mean, it's amazing the outpouring of these people. They have the same compassion that I do about these dogs. What's going to happen is when they go to the 120-run facility in Virginia, they will be evaluated. They will be checked for chips. We will try to find out what companies have owned them. Consider that they were abandoned dogs. Are they given to us by the people that are running the country over there? That we have possession. So there's no legal issue that's going to be going on. We have possession and ownership of these dogs. From that evaluation and everything else, the dogs will be shipped to Florida to a rehabilitation center where they will be checked and any medication or anything else that needs to be given to them will happen. Now, the organization at that, once the plane takes off and is in the air, I will disclose the organization that is helping me. I do not work for them. I do not get paid by anybody to do this, okay? Once they're evaluated and situated that they're okay and clear to be rehomed, as I said before, that if any of those dogs have handlers here in the United States that want them, we will rehome them to them, okay? The dogs that have no handlers to go to, there will be a process in which the owners, private owners, will have to submit an application for approval. And trust me, the application that I had from my dog Polly, it was quite lengthy. And the experience that you know I have, they check every bit of it. The chief of police, the colleges, Florida Department of Law Enforcement, they check me way a lot. Okay. Mm-hmm. Anyway. So then they'll be rehomed to those private people, and hopefully the dogs will live happily ever after. I'm hoping they do. You gotta understand, these dogs have been through a lot. I mean, it is misery. And I just want to see them see a easy life for the rest of their life.
And that's absolutely true, yeah. And we will cover that in a future video as well on the things that they've been through and the health effects. Like, you're not just gonna adopt them and go running with them and go play ball every day with them. Like, for example, my dog, the dog I have here, she was a contract walking dog. She spent 6 years over there. She has half her teeth. She's had 2 stomach puxies. Her medical records are like that thick. It's ridiculous. And so don't think you're going to adopt them and then that's it. So that's why we're going to educate the public. We are going to do videos on how to transition the dog into your lifestyle. And we can go over some of the questions that might be on the application process, what to expect when you get the dog, and so forth. So final question, and we're going to be really brief on this question because we will most likely be covering it in a future video in more detail, more depth. So looking at everything that's happened, Dan, and over all the way to, from Vietnam until present day. How do you think the military and private companies going forward, how can we help our canine heroes the most when they're going over there, they're serving our country, and then they're coming home? What are some of the recommendations that you would make for that dog from the moment it stops walking to retirement?
Okay. I don't think this is political, but the organization that is in my team and I will be going before Congress and trying to get the contract working dogs put into the Canine Act and allow those dogs by law to come back. Now, there's been a lot of responsible contractors, I mean, that are been top-notch, that have brought their dogs back along with their handlers, but there are some pretty shady, and they don't need to be dealing with our government. They don't need to be having our contracts, okay? And they need to be monitored. So they need to establish a system where there will be a monitor that will watch carefully what that company is doing. And if they're not doing anything right, to penalize them and get them out of there and get a better contractor in. So that's what we plan on doing. That's another phase of my plan once we get these dogs back. And you'll see that once that plane takes off with the dogs in it and the organization that has helped me all the way through, you'll see that it is top-notch. And the people that are behind me in my different organizations, I cannot name the people in Kabul, okay? Because like I say, I have had death threats, so I can't be on that flight. But my interpreter will be on that flight and five other handlers to load those crates up into the plane, get the veterinarians there, take care of the dogs, load the dogs, and get out of there.
Dan, Clint's asking how many dogs are over there right now. Do we have an exact number, or do we just have an
No,
approximate?
no. Actually, you don't, because now I'm finding out that the Northern City has contract working dogs, and they just had an explosion today at the mosque. So I don't know if they're utilizing those dogs. I don't know if those dogs are seeing the kennels dying. I have asked one of my team members if he could to fly up there because they do have flights, domestic flights available, to see what he can find out. But right now, my estimate that the original 68 dogs at the airport have probably doubled, and the 60 dogs that are at the Mission of Industry were 60. There's some dogs at the EU Embassy. We don't know how many. I did see a picture of one starving in the kennels. I'm hoping that that was moved to the 60 dogs in the mission. But what's going to happen is once we get the permits that nobody can take away from us, nobody can deny them or anything else because it's coming from the very top, they are allowing my team to go in and videotape all the kennels and videotape and take pictures of the dogs. They will be sent back to me. I will release them as soon as the plane is in the air. So I would probably say between 200 and 300 dogs
Wow.
are around Kabul.
So, do you have any final thoughts for us at all, Dan?
Well, just support my cause. I mean,
Absolutely.
if you want to go to my Facebook page, it's Military Dog Handlers, and I do put reports in there as I can. Okay, I mean, I'm sorry that Facebook blocked me. The reason why they did is because they affiliate me with a terrorist organization, and that's against their community standards. And so that's why I can't have live videos or anything else. But I still have the ability to write my reports and let people know what's going on. And please follow me and please support me. The next phase that I'll be going into will be asking for donations because we need to build a facility here, and we're going to have a facility in Kabul to collect those contract working dogs as they retire. and send them back to me. So that's our next phase, and hopefully that will go through. And we can have the support of a lot of people. But as of right now, I have never asked for money, and I don't get paid to do this. It's out of compassion for these dogs. And I appreciate your time with this interview and getting the word out.
All right. Thank you so much. Does anyone have any final questions they'd like to ask? Thank you guys for watching. I appreciate it. Let's support Dan as much as we can. Hopefully he doesn't get me kicked off Facebook. And I just want to say, Dan is a true, true American hero. If you ever have had the privilege to speak with Dan, you are, Dan.
I'm just a man.
Yes, you are, Dan.
That brings people together.
Yes, you are, Dan. True American hero right here, Dan is. Most definitely. And we appreciate you and everything you've done. And I don't know who could, I mean, if you just listened to everything he just said, like, who could have done this much in this short amount of time to get this organized. It's crazy. What he's able to accomplish is just insane. I have a lot of respect for that. And the time that you've taken to do this is just amazing. So we will definitely, most definitely support you. And remember, support all military personnel, support all canine heroes. If you're watching today and this video has triggered you, or if you're a veteran and you're struggling, you can reach out to myself or Dan, and we'll make sure that you find the resources that you need, because there is so much help out there for veterans. So if you're struggling or you need someone to talk to, message us. We're available, and we will stop everything and make sure you get the help you need, okay? Guys, God bless, and thank you so much for watching. And keep in mind, we're going to continue with these videos in support of our military and contract working dogs and trying to get the lives that they're living over there while they're working better, trying to get the retirement for them that they need, the good homes after once they're ready to retire. So please continue just watch our videos. Support us. I mean, support Dan, support the cause that he's working towards. And any questions you have, any special videos you want featured, if you want to know what it's like to own a retired military working dog, contract working dog, if you're thinking about adopting one, we're going to do a video on that. Send me your questions or good questions, topics that you think need to be covered to help us support them. And thank you so much again for watching.